and welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I am Jeremy Sternhagen.
And I'm Tyson Ferris.
And we are here for part two of the 1978 Joe Dante classic Piranha.
Yeah, so why is the water cold now?
Because
it was warm when they got in.
Because the scientist is doing an experiment? The scientist we haven't met yet?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't say it was warm earlier. They stuck their hand in, and didn't they just say, like...
She goes, oh, it feels great.
Yeah, she didn't say it was warm.
Well,
but
she didn't say it was... I don't think anybody sticks their hand into an ice-cold pool and goes, oh, it feels great.
As a story point, it is setting up the fact that these piranha can survive in any water temperature.
Yeah, so maybe they're changing the water temperature on them all the time.
I can only guess. So we enter the science
lab. I'm just putting this question out there because I have some theories on said doctor, Herr Doctor.
Kevin McCarthy.
Yes. Dr. Hulk. Yes.
Okay, so how did you feel when we got to this the science lab scene?
Okay, so Fish Gremlin is out of place.
Fish Gremlin, the stop animation one that's running around on the floor?
Yes. What the hell is going on?
Exactly. Yes.
I get where they were going, but the fact that there's no payoff for this anywhere else in the movie is a problem.
Big time. And the commentary specifically mentions that was the plan.
Yes.
And you can tell that it doesn't, like, so if you're not going to have it pay off, just get rid of it.
It doesn't need to be there.
Right.
You could cut this scene. You could literally cut those out.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't change anything.
Both of them. So you have the claymation one, and then you have like the underwater puppet snake.
I don't mind that one.
That one's not as bad.
I don't mind that one.
Yeah. It's not as.
Cause this is a, you know what this scene really reminded me of? And I think, Pierre Jeunet, probably is a fan of Piranha, and this really reminds me of the alien resurrection scene with all the Ripleys.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I tried to block that movie from my memory, but yes, that scene stands out. That and the...
So I really feel like the guy that did...
Jean-Pierre Jeunet, whatever his name is. Yeah.
I don't know how you say it.
Yeah.
Anyway, this scene just really reminded me of that. I was like, oh my God, they totally ripped off Piranha to do. I'm like, what a crazy thing that this huge alien movie is ripping off Piranha like to do their genetic testing scene.
One thing of note that I like about this scene, so we already discussed, so people who worked on Star Wars worked on this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Tippett did that stop motion creature.
Yep.
And it looks great. It just doesn't fit in this movie, but it's a great looking. He did.
I believe he did the Tauntauns in Empire.
He did. He did the.
My favorite.
He did the chess set in Star Wars.
Yep.
And he also went on to work on RoboCop for Ed 209, which is produced by John Davison, who produced this movie.
Yep.
And he's also in this movie later, which we'll get to.
Cool.
Phil Tippett. And then the underwater puppet is Chris Wallace, who went on to do Gremlins for Joe Dante.
Awesome.
So, and we're not even done with the special effects people who worked on this movie. We have one more big special effects name coming up later in the movie.
We do.
Actually, no. You know what? We already skipped. Wait, no. We haven't got to him yet.
We haven't got to him yet.
Yep. Sorry.
So Kevin McCarthy waits until they drain the pond to do anything about anything that's going on.
Yep. It cinematically makes for an interesting storytelling, but as a reflection of reality, it's a poor reveal, I thought.
Yeah.
Like he waits till they're draining the pond.
What are you doing?
Yeah. And then why do they knock him out? Why do they beat him up?
Well, because he's attacking one of them. Like,
yeah, but
this giant hook thing.
Well, no, he just goes straight for the shutoff valve. If you watch the scene, he just goes straight for the shutoff valve.
Yeah, but then he starts attacking.
And then they start stopping. Yeah. But if you watch it, it's all of the fighting that they do against him is kind of unnecessary. He just wants to shut off the valve.
Yeah.
So Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, that's kind of huge.
Right.
Yeah.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
So I have a note here. Kevin McCarthy is a great nut. He just plays a great, just psychosis, manic guy. Like
him and Dick Miller are in almost every Joe Dante movie, and or Dick Miller. So,
well, Dick Miller definitely.
Yeah, and he's fantastic. And I just, every movie he's in, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
And he's always fan. He'll always be that guy who's in every Joe Dante. I didn't know he had a career. Oh, actually, I recognized him. And he has a scene in Gremlins. He's in Gremlins. Do you know how he's in Gremlins?
I haven't seen Gremlins in years.
They're watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers on TV. So Kevin McCarthy makes a cameo in Gremlins as another movie he was in.
Sure. Yeah, one of his most famous. Yeah.
If not the most famous movie he's in. Yeah.
He's also in DOA.
The original one?
The original.
Okay.
He's like the lead.
Not the remake that had Dennis Quaid in it. Dennis Quaid, who was in Interspace.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's the earliest film I know of him to be in. So
I just know him from his sci-fi, from Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Joe Dante movies. I'm sure I've seen him in other things, but he'll always be the guy in Interspace to me, because that's the movie. That movie just came out at the right time in my life where I watched it 100 times.
Oh, yeah. So. It's fantastic. So, yeah. Now we get salt. Yeah. So they drain the pond. Mm-hmm. Salt water. That's an interesting little tidbit we get in this scene.
Yep.
And I like that he thinks it's a dog.
The bones?
Yeah. It's like, that's a really big dog. Like,
it's definitely not human, though. The rib cage. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. I mean, it certainly doesn't look. Nope. Superhuman, but like
they don't even look like real bones to me. It looks like
it just looks like a weird, like, I don't know what they were going for here. Anyway, I guess it's really neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Then you get Kevin McCarthy and they got him tied up and he's just nuttier than squirrel. So I'm going to keep bringing this up. So here he's concerned, super concerned about what's happened, but won't tell them why.
Yeah, there's no good reason for that.
I think there is.
My reason is just that he's a nut and he's paranoid.
Well, so I think it goes back to, why is the water cold now?
Mm-hmm.
Why did he come out of his house after the kids were dead?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's playing that he didn't want any of this to happen, but he really actually did.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think, like, so he has that whole scene. Maybe it's later when he's talking about his role as a scientist.
He's purposefully, we'll get to that, but he's purposely obtuse when he doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
So anyway, they just kind of leave him alone, tied up in his room. Mm-hmm. And then we get this scene. This is an odd scene where they're trying to do a little character background here in this scene. With the two leads.
Yep.
Anyway, he talks about a smelting. What did he used to do? And he's like, I was part of a smelting operation, but we were killing too many fish.
Yeah.
And so this is a weird thing for me. When I hear smelting, I think of catching smelt, which are a small 6 to 9 inch long fish.
Okay.
Their numbers are way down now. Nobody catches them anymore because their numbers are way down. But they used to be just thick. You could just, you don't even catch them with like a rod. You just, when they're running, they're like a salmon. They have runs where they'll move about in big schools and in really shallow rivers. So you can literally just walk out of the river and you would just literally just drill holes into the bottom of a 5-gallon bucket and just set it in the river. And they would just fill up the bucket. And then you would pick up the bucket and all the water would drain out and it would just be a bucket full of fish.
Smelt. Okay.
And they're very tasty.
I'd never heard of that before.
Anyway, so smelting, that's what I thought of when we we're killing too many fish. And I was like, yeah, okay. You can literally catch them. Like, they're the easiest fish to catch. I remember doing this with my grandpa when I was a kid. Anyway, out on the Sandy River in Oregon.
Okay. Well, I knew it for what he's referring to because for a few years as a kid, I lived in Helena, Montana. And right outside of East Helena, there's a smelting plant, which for anybody who cares, it's basically... It's
metallurgy.
It's extracting metal from rock using heat.
Yeah.
So, and it looks terrible. It looks like every science fiction movie that looks like a burnt out dystopian future. That's what a smelting plant looks like.
Yeah, so yeah.
We always knew like, yeah, that's bad. Even as a kid, you're like, oh, that's what bad movies look like. Smelting plants.
Yeah, smelting plants. Anyway, so killing too many fish. What they're talking about is the metals and not the fish. So
yep.
Anyway, but it does tie in later to the ending. So yes. Once again, every scene so far, we're adding adding layers that pay off later.
And not in a ham-fisted, heavy-handed way.
Either. Oh, no. It's very nonchalant.
I don't watch this and go, oh, that's going to pay off later. You know, I think we mentioned this in Jaws where,
It honestly was, I was surprised that there was so much of this in this movie.
There's a ton of it, yeah. And like, so much what? Well thought out?
Like, just how well thought out.
And directing.
How well thought out and attention to detail this movie has.
Yes.
When it's such a fun, kind of
fun,
silly, frivolous
movie. Yeah, it's not high-minded stuff. It's just...
But their storytelling is really, really well done.
Yeah. There is... So I just mentioned that it's not high-minded. I think it gets mentioned... There is a lot of discussion about how this movie is some kind of weird analogy for the Vietnam War.
Well, they definitely get into that, yeah.
Right. I do. The thing that stood out to me in the commentary is that they mentioned that at this period in history, the late 70s, basically uniforms equal bad guys.
Yeah.
And so, and a distrust of government and all that. So there is that kind of through line in this movie that, like, oh, the government is surely working against us. And it is interesting. I think the only real, if you're going to tie this into the Vietnam War at all, it's just that it's not just piranha. It's human, it's military.
It's the man.
Yeah, it's military engineered piranha.
Yeah.
Before we end this scene, I don't know if you have more thoughts on the scene, but I have one question. Is the ending line in this scene supposed to imply that they hook up?
Oh, that she was trying to get under the covers?
Right. Or is she just like her, or is her character just like making that clever joke? Like,
I can't tell if she's cold or I think we're meant to believe that she sleeps with him.
I couldn't decide. I'm like, well, I think maybe that's like good filmmaking. Like, you can decide whatever you want.
I think it can really go either way.
She's either just making a joke like, ha ha, of course we're not going to sleep together, but I'm just going to make the funny joke because it's... That's how, like, she's either really clever making that joke because they're not going to sleep together.
I don't see them sleeping together.
Right.
Right. So it's got to be the other thing.
That's where I was coming from. Like,
because
there's no chemistry.
There's no chemistry. There's no sexual tension between these people.
Right.
Like, they might as well be two potatoes next to each other.
Because I do remember, so I haven't seen this movie in a bunch of years, and I always remember, my memory is of it, is that the movie is implying that they do sleep together, but then upon rewatching it 2 days ago for this podcast,
I don't think it does.
I was like, oh no, she's just being smart. She's just being clever.
She's just busting his balls,
She's
right?
just busting his balls,
yeah.
And it works. It is even better. That's like about halfway through this movie, I'm going like, oh, this movie's even better than I remember. I remember thinking it was like a well-done kind of cutesy movie, but... We might be overselling this movie. I just really appreciate everything that's going on in this movie.
I just thoroughly enjoyed it. I had fun watching this movie.
Yeah. I'm glad.
I did not have fun watching Orca. There's no point in that movie where I'm like, this is fun. I'm like, it felt like homework. Anyway.
I enjoyed Orca maybe a little bit more than you did.
Yeah.
But I totally agree, like, on a scale of movie making, Piranha blows Orca out of the water.
Absolutely. There's joy behind this film. Do you know what I mean? There's no joy behind Orca.
Orca is too heavy-handed with its social commentary and...
And even this has social commentary in it, but it's...
Orca's way cerebral, and it doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think this movie just works, and it just... I don't know. It's fun. Yeah. I enjoy it. It's fun. So they got to take the raft now. They don't have the Jeep. The Jeep has been crashed. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to talk about that too much. It is a good crash.
Yep.
Good practical crash. Reading Huck Finn to your daughter, that's a weird book to read to your daughter.
Very true.
It's problematic, to say the least.
But would it have been viewed as problematic back in the 70s? Late 70s?
I imagine so.
Okay. Because I...
There's a lot of N-word.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because
gems in there.
We read Huck Finn in school, probably 9th or 10th grade. And I remember at the time thinking like, oh, yeah, this is fine. Like yeah, I'm mature enough to handle this. Mm-hmm. But even now as an adult, like... That book, you don't go into that book lightly.
I mean, no.
I'm not saying a 12-year-old can't read it or that you can't. You definitely should not read it to a.
I'm just saying reading it aloud to your daughter seems weird to me. I'm sorry. But
well, how old is she? Like, not old enough in this movie.
No.
She looks like she's about 10.
Yeah.
10, 11 maybe. But that's. Yeah.
I'm just saying Twain uses the N-word freely in that book.
Yeah. And it's appropriate to the setting, but yeah, it's definitely makes for a book that's not
I don't know.
Not for uneducated ears.
Yeah, it seemed weird to me. Anyway.
But that brings us to an interesting point. We've kind of now at the 26th.
First, now we're going to get another review that we don't like white people and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah. For those of you that don't know, it's my whoever gave us this review on iTunes. Thank you.
We're happy to get any reviews.
Yes. We got, I think, one of our lower rating reviews on iTunes is
our only low rating.
Our only low rating is the comment was that it was it's a good podcast, but
they seem overly.
We're overly concerned with the fact that there's too many white people, like that Jaws is white, like lots of white people.
Yeah, it's too many white people in the film.
Not enough minorities.
And not enough minorities, and they seem overly concerned by that, which if that's the one thing you took away from our 127 episodes on Jaws, it's like, I feel like you only listen to like maybe one or two of those episodes.
If you randomly sampled an episode and that's what you got.
Yeah. I was like, wow.
Okay.
That was interesting takeaway.
That's a huge leap to think we're talking about that every episode. But even if we are, I suggest you look in the mirror, sir or ma'am, because I don't think we deserve the low rating.
Yeah. I think you might have the problem, not us.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this movie has a bunch of white people in it.
It does.
Not enough minority. So I'll be on record right now. If you want to give us a low rating for commenting that Piranha has a lot of white people in it, it's true.
It's
Piranha
true.
Has a lot of white people in it.
Yeah.
But it is Texas
It's Texas in the late 70s. So I'm not even sure people of color were allowed there at that point in time.
Well, they were, just not at summer camps.
Well, and certainly not in movies.
And that's a crime. Anyway, if it's not coming across.
Tongue is firmly in cheek.
Yes.
Just much like this film.
But here we are at 28 minutes into this movie, and we like jump into a whole new set of characters in a whole new setting.
So we get to the camp. And I think we mentioned that
characters.
Yeah, we meet a whole bunch of new characters, and we mentioned that the camp music is not good.
Nope.
You
mentioned earlier that some music is good. What do you like?
I really like there's this really kind of low, kind of Morricone-esque, kind of when the piranhas are stalking and that kind of moody music. I really like that.
I think the music towards the end of the movie works well.
Yeah.
We can get to that.
Yeah.
But kind of early on as it's trying to set the mood, it's just, romantic and weird.
Yeah, them sneaking around the testing facility, I think that's good stuff. Yeah. I think the opening music with the kids is great. Really, the camping music was the stuff that really
just,
oh boy, is it schmaltzy. anyway, The campers are in yellow and blue, and I gotta believe that's a Jaws reference, right?
I think you're stretching.
Oh, I think it's a Jaws reference.
And the canoes are red. And
no, the canoes are yellow.
There's a mix of color. It's all the canoes come in all colors.
Well, but the campers do not come in all colors. They come in yellow and blue, and that's all you're gonna get.
Yep.
So, which I really like, and it made me happy. And I was like, I really think they're doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
So
we meet two.
In my notes, I go, Jaws reference, ? And I said, I think so.
Yep.
So say what you will, but I think it's a Jaws reference. So.
Yeah. So we get to meet one of our two main camp counselors.
Mr. Dumont.
Well, we get the two teenage girl counselors. We meet one of them now. And then, of course, we get, the Paul Bartel character who, holy cow, he knows what movie he's in.
Boy, do he.
He is just going. He is swinging for the fences.
God, he is.
And it works. It just reminds you what movie you're in.
It really does work. And it's funny that it works for his character because there's other characters that try to do this and it does not work.
Him and Kevin McCarthy and
the Colonel later, I think.
Oh yeah.
He's trying to do that and he's not trying. I don't know if he's trying hard enough or he's like, I don't know. It's like either you got to play totally straight or you got to go to the fences and he's somewhere in the middle and it just doesn't work.
For him. His character's supposed to be a jerk and he just comes off as a jerk, mm-hmm. like not a like ha-ha funny, like a
whereas Dumont's a real piece of work, but you kind of enjoy him anyway.
You can't wait for him to be on screen because you're like, he's going to be
like a total ass.
Yeah. He's going to be an enjoyable ass to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. So right off the, he's like, what's her last name? Gorman? Is that right? Grogan.
Yeah. Grogan. Yeah.
So, he's like fish, people eat fish. Fish don't eat people.
That is so that if his tongue was any further in his cheek, it would be protruding out of his cheek.
I know. And I was like, well, they do. We've seen movies where fish eat people, and we know for a fact that fish eat people.
It's kind of like in Jaws 2. Sharks don't take things personally, Mr. Brody.
Yes. But at this point, I really want to point out to our listeners, piranhas don't eat people. Ever. There are zero fatalities from piranhas. It is a myth.
Oh, in real life.
In real life, piranhas don't eat people. There's never been a fatality from a piranha attack.
I'm assuming you Googled that because I didn't.
So the mythos, I want to get into this really quick here, right off the bat.
I want to hear it.
The mythos of the piranha being this bloodthirsty, ravenous fish will strip you to the bone. Mm-hmm. They certainly can do that.
Right.
It is in their wheelhouse.
Right.
But they that only happens in very extreme circumstances, and even then, it really won't happen. Like, you literally has to have human intervention for them to do that.
Yes.
So, and it comes from Theodore Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. This part I know. Yeah.
Okay. And he wrote about being on the Amazon, and they led this cow into this river, and it just gets stripped to the bone by these piranha. And he writes about it in very, very eloquent terms. And what he didn't know is that the people that he was with had, they knew an American president was coming. And they wanted to show him this amazing thing.
Yeah.
So they had walled off with nets a portion of the river, had trapped piranha in there, and even stocked it with more piranha, and then not fed them.
Right.
Forever and ever, to the point where they're almost eating each other, which they will do in extreme things. And then they nicked the legs of this cow, so it would be bleeding.
Yeah.
And then let it into the river, and of course they smell the blood.
And they went Feeding frenzy.
And they went feeding frenzy on this thing.
Yeah.
So they can't, can they do it? Yes. Do they do it? No.
No.
They do not.
No.
Anything bigger than them, they run away from. They're a very timid fish.
Yep.
They are part of the tetra family.
Yep.
Which, if you've ever seen neon tetras, those little guys that are always mm-hmm. scared of everybody in the yep. big fish tanks,
mm-hmm.
They are the same species as them. Yeah. And yeah, they are a fright. They are a frightened fish.
Very skittish.
Very skittish. Yep. Do not. But they are opportunistic in their feeding. They are omnivorous. They eat literally anything.
Yes.
So.
Did you know that I had piranhas in a tank?
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
They, but they, yeah, they do not eat people. They will nip people. A lot of people have been attacked by piranhas. No one's been killed by piranhas.
Yes. They might see how you taste.
Yeah. They might go,
or get a snack.
Yeah. And, my understanding is if, they're mating, you can get nipped.
Yeah. But then again, you can get nipped by a trout.
Yeah.
A perch.
Yeah.
Like, they do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
So I had piranha and yeah, I can confirm that, I went out as a, I don't even remember, but I bought 4 piranha and put them in a 15-gallon tank, and I got the tank set up. I put them in there, and then for the first week, I thought I lost them. I thought they were dead. It just turns out they will literally hide anywhere they can in the tank.
Like, yeah,
they do not want to be seen.
No, they're.
And it wasn't until they got too big to hide that they were just. And even then, they would like hide. Like you would see them, but they would. They're not like just out like.
No,
putting on a show like a goldfish.
Yeah, they're incredibly timid.
Incredibly yeah. timid, yeah. yeah.
So, yeah, this whole thing that piranhas eat people, just not a thing. But nope. It's not a problem for this movie because these are genetically engineered piranha. And no problem.
Yes. So, a quick side note, too. My introduction to piranha was the Richard Pryor movie, The Toy. Do you know this movie?
I know of it.
Yeah. There's a scene in there where Richard Pryor, like, cartoonishly, like Bugs Bunny, runs across the surface of the water to avoid piranha. And I might be remembering that wrong, but I remember thinking like, oh, that's real. That's how piranha are. So, yep.
Yeah.
So I think even when I saw this movie for the first time, I was like, this is fact, not fiction. This is what piranha will do.
Yeah. So anyway, I was, I kind of was shocked to learn that zero fatalities from mm-hmm. piranha. I go, so a lot of people have been, they've brought in people up that have been stripped to the bone of piranha.
Yeah, they'd have to be like dead already.
But they were dead already.
Yeah.
So people have drowned and then been eaten by piranha. That's oh, yeah. a total thing. So really yep. the Kevin McCarthy scene where they dip him into the water and they eat him up.
That's the only accurate scene.
That's really the only accurate scene in the movie.
But you jumped ahead.
Yeah, I did. So yeah, anyway, Mr. Dumont, he's a real piece of work. I liked the intestinal fortitude is a great line.
Guts.
Guts. Yeah. yeah, a lot of guts in that scene.
Lots of discussion about internal body parts.
Well, and even organs. What the sing-songy what boys are made of, greasy, grimy, gopher guts.
That's all part of the charm of this movie yeah. that I love. It's just working too well.
Yeah, it's like greasy, grimy, gopher mm-hmm. guts, mutilated monkey meat, tiny baby birdie feet.
Yeah.
What else is it? Something, something, and then, like, all in a Greasy. Bucket of mud. Yeah.
Anyway, oh, man.
Yeah.
Somewhere the 8-year-old version of me knows this by heart.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love on the comment. So we jump to the Keenan Wynn scene where he's mm-hmm. on the dock with the dog. I love in the commentary how they point out that when they shot this, Joe Dante is out on a boat shooting it. He doesn't have sound. So he doesn't know what Keenan Wynn is saying. And so he didn't find out until they printed it and cut it. And
oh, really? So this is just ad-libbed?
So his whole, the joke he tells, like...
The drunken yeah, joke story?
That was completely unknown till it was in the can, what he was telling. And pretty funny joke, actually. I kind of liked it.
It is funny if you can understand it.
Plays to the character perfectly.
It does.
And what is... He's just...
Oh, and then there's... as the young Grogan, little girl Grogan... is walking away and then she like looks yeah. back at the water. We think it's from her perspective, but it's really, we've had a scene change.
Oh yeah. It's a fantastic cut.
It's a fantastic scene change just doing editing wise. And, yep. And then we realize that we're actually, it's different water in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Jack again. And, yeah. And his great little, drunk joke story. And then once again, just their attention to detail. You know, in the beginning scene, he said, he goes, this trip to town takes longer and longer. He's like, why don't you use your car? He goes, it's up on blocks where it belongs. Cut to his house. What's in the background? A car up on blocks.
Yep.
It's like, well done, guys. Like, I would have never noticed that in a million years.
Was that part of the production design? Because you feel like that's a lot of work.
But it's in the script, and then there it is at his house. Like, it's got to be on purpose, right?
Yep.
I mean, anyway, he gets dispatched rather unceremoniously. And not with a lot of tension or anything. It just kind of happens.
Yeah, there's definitely, I will say that, the most of the opening attacks in this movie, basically until you get to the end of the movie, you don't see the piranha. I think the first real, so you get to see one of the piranha in the jar in the science lab.
Yes.
And then really you don't see it until the piranha, the first real good look you get at the piranha is when they are tearing apart the raft. You see the, and it's never more than like a frame or two at a second.
Yeah.
But there is definitely part of me that upon rewatching this film multiple times, like, this Keenan Wynn scene, like the fact that it cuts away and then you find him later dead.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish we would have got more of a reveal in this scene of seeing the piranha. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but.
Well, the dog reacts to him. I mean.
Yeah. I just wish we would have seen piranha anyway. Maybe the first big reveal. Well, we'll get to it.
I don't know. I feel like Brandy's the pipit we didn't get, you know?
Yeah. The dog lives in this one.
Yeah, yeah.
That dog looks just like the dog from Mad Max, from Road Warrior. Just saying. Same breed, I'm sure. Yeah.
I got some more on that dog when we get to the end credits.
Okay.
So then we get, we're back on the raft, and we learn that it's Dr. Hoke, which made me think of Ren Hoke.
Yes. It's Hoke, you idiot. Hoke.
I think I pronounced it that way in an earlier episode. So once again, he still is not offering any explanation. Like, he's asked point blank, what happened to the kids?
Yeah.
And he just doesn't say anything. And then she's dangling her hand in the water. And he's like, don't do that. But why, dude? Why shouldn't she do that? Like, you made these things. Tell them why. Like,
I can just only surmise that his character is just off the deep end. He's clearly been like working in a lab by himself for how many years? Like, right?
Yeah.
He says they've closed it down. Like, he's been a hermit, like maintaining this piranha lab. I think in the movie it says like they've closed it 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation for his character being completely detached from rationality.
Yeah. So once again, we get him like being weird and then not giving no explanation of why he's being weird. Mm-hmm. And then they come across the Jake.
I just can't separate the actor name from the character name.
Yeah.
It's
Keenan Wynn. Yeah, Keenan Wynn. Anyway, so they come across him. The dog's barking. Actually, the dog jumps into the car that's up on blocks.
Yep.
Anyway, great.
Dog's not too bothered with the fact that his owner just got mauled.
Well, it's upset. They're saying it's the most upset they've ever seen him.
That's true.
Or her. I can't remember. It's Brandy, so I imagine it's a girl.
Which,
by the way, Brandy is the only thing he didn't deliver to the alcoholic, you know. So.
Well played, sir.
Ba-dun-ching. So great leg effects here, and I think this is where we can talk about the last big name,
Rob Bottin.
Yes,
who famously did American Werewolf in London, and later worked also on RoboCop. He is the designer of the RoboCop outfit.
So cool.
Another connection to this movie, John Davis and the producer.
And I got to feel he had a hand in the guy that dissolves on the windshield.
Oh, well, I think he did all the effects for RoboCop. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
And Phil Tippett. So yeah. It was basically the same special effects team that did this did RoboCop. Is there a RoboCop minute? Just throwing myself out there. I would do a RoboCop minute. I love that movie. That movie is 5 stars on a scale of 5+. That is a perfect movie. One thing I'll quick throw out, you know, the kind of the bigger Rob Bottin story that once special effects shifted to CG, he basically was just like, I'm done. Yeah. He's out. He's like one of those effect, like unlike Dennis Muren and Richard Edlund and a lot of those guys who really embraced like optical effects. And
he was like, nope, if it ain't on camera, I don't even want to do it.
Not that he was a naysayer, but he was just like, that's not my thing.
I have no interest in this.
Yeah. And he basically kind of dropped off the radar once, you know, the early 90s, once special effects went optical. Like, I'd be curious. I should have prepared a little better for this, but to see kind of where his career ended.
Yeah.
But yeah, if any of you want to get a stronger appreciation of Rob Bottin, watch the documentary Terror Takes Shape, which is the making of John Carpenter's The Thing. Did I mention that he did The Thing?
Mm-hmm.
Possibly the greatest, like if you want a creature effects movie. It's Rob Bottin and Stan Winston did The Thing. And Stan Winston did very little of it. It's mostly Rob Bottin.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in that documentary discussing everything, and he is a riot. Like, he's awesome.
Yeah.
So, anyway. And he came to this movie because Joe Dante asked Rick Baker, who worked on American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
And Rick Baker was too busy. And
it's like, but I know the 17-year-old kid that's really talented.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, there's your Rob Bottin story.
Yeah, cool. Which I think is a good place to go to our break. And we'll see you next time for episode 3.
Thanks for listening, folks. And hit us on the PayPal, hit us on the Facebook, and we will see you next week right here on The Real Jaws Minute for Piranha Part 3.
Bye.
Bye.